Welcome to Win236. What's new with Microsoft Intune and System Center Configuration Manager? My name's Macca. Have with me Russell.
G'day, guys.
And Matt. And we're here to talk to you today about what's new in Configuration Manager. So you thought you weren't going to get to see it. Well, guess what? You are. And between here and now, we're going to basically take you through a bunch of stuff. So firstly, we'll just give you a quick one-slide overview of the state of play when it comes to servicing of Config Manager moving forward in Windows 10. We'll then level set everybody to bring us up to where we are currently with Config Manager 2012 SP2 and Config Manager 2012 R2 SP1. What we'll then do is just making sure everyone knows sort of what it is that we've been doing for the past little while. And then we'll bring you all up to speed with what we've got in Config Manager Technical Preview 3. We'll also probably take you through some of the stuff that we did in Technical Preview 1 and 2 as well. Again, just bringing everybody up to speed. And then we'll think about how we're actually going to be dealing with Config Manager moving forward. And that will sort of lead us into our next steps and what we take away from here. And we're getting very, very close to a point where the next version of System Center Configuration Manager becomes real again. So in order to sort of bring us up to speed with the burning question of what's happening with Windows 10, is you've taken that slide out on me between when I last saw the deck and...
We'll talk about that a little bit later on. It's coming.
That's all right. I don't mind looking like an idiot. I mean, it happens most days anyway. So it's all right. I've been feeling like that ever since the first time I saw SMS 2.0. And it's various service packs. So let's instead forget about that first bit and bring us up to speed with what it is that we've been doing in SP2 and R2 SP1. Alrighty, so if we look at the key features that we've brought into play, the first major thing that we've tried to make your life easier with is AppV, and specifically around virtual app publishing and how quickly that virtual app gets down to the machine when it's associated with an end user, so when we've targeted that to a user collection. So you may remember the way in which AppV deployment worked in the past. A user would log on. We'd then go and hand off to our management point to say, which of these virtual applications do I need? Management point would then go, let me query database, run a ton of stored procedures against the database, potentially knock the database over, eventually figure out what it is we actually want to do. And then finally, the virtual app client aspect of the Config Manager client wakes up and starts either streaming or pulling the content down, getting it done. What did that mean in terms of reality when I sat there in front of the machine and waited for my virtual application to show up? It meant that I logged in and went, let's just run my virtual application of Office. Oh, it's not there. All right, I haven't got a watch, but you know what I mean. Let me wait a bit longer. Let me go get a coffee. I thought this didn't happen since SMS 2003. I thought this was supposed to be instant. And then eventually we get something about 10 minutes later. So in SP2 and SP1 there, we did a lot of work in making sure that that really massive delay and that huge hit on the database in the back end was brought down. What we also did is we really did some good work around increasing the scalability. Now, Config Manager as it is already fairly scalable, right? So, you know, as long as you're not, you know, tipping hundreds and hundreds of thousands of clients, you're pretty much okay. So we took that primary site scalability number from 100 to around about 150K of clients through quite a bit of work we did in making the WSUS component a lot more snappy, I suppose the word is, that we're looking for a lot more improvements there. We also improved the scale and performance for your pool distribution points. And a lot of work was done in getting the feature parity from the Intune service into the console as well. So you may all be familiar with what we can do now in terms of hybrid mode with Config Manager. So what we can do is create ourselves a site system that is essentially a connector into an Intune subscription, allowing us to use the console, our one set of skills that we have in that console, to build not only the applications and packages and so on and so forth that we need from our on-prem environment, but also set up those applications and those settings and those profiles for delivery via the cloud service as well, and push that into Intune, and then by definition get that out to things like iOS and Android devices and so on and so forth. So we're just making sure that we got more of that feature set from Intune into the console. Another thing we did was making sure that data transfer reliability across slow or high latency networks was improved upon. So when it came to content distribution, So we've decided to update a particular application binary or a task sequence and its associated source files. What we're going to do is we're going to take those source files from the site server, we're going to pump them down to the DPs, and in really unreliable networks, that could be pretty tricky. So we did some stuff around checkpoint restarting and so on and so forth to make that a lot more reliable. Additionally, we have full compatibility for existing features in Windows 10.
This was, just to jump in there, this is a bit tricky for some people because the messaging wasn't awesome. So what this means is that...
We got messaging wrong.
I know.
Serious?
Who would have thought? The stuff that you can do with previous versions of Windows, you can do with Windows 10, right? But handily, Config Manager runs command lines, so you know you can do a lot more through that mechanism. But what we'll get into later is the new version of SECM now giving full support for all the cool new stuff you get with Win 10. SQL 2014 was nice as well, but of course you couldn't install it against a 2014 SQL Server. You needed 2012 and then you could upgrade it later. So we're getting there. Baby steps, right?
Absolutely. And in the tradition of really cheesy Microsoft shtick, wouldn't it be great if we could handle always on in Config Manager?
What's that?
Would you be able to help me with that, Rusty? We'll get there. Don't worry about it. All right. In terms of those improvements, there's a lot of information on these slides. Hopefully Jeff Alexander's left the room because he would be having a fit at this point if he was looking at those slides. But the fact of the matter is that we've done a lot of work getting us to where we are today in SP1 and SP2. So really, this is more an eye chart just for your own reference if you go out there later on and download the slides. But Rusty, yeah. You got anything in there that you really want to
call out? Something in particular that I was happy about was the improved task sequence resiliency for software updates.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure you've all been there, deploying Windows 7, you know, one of 5,000 updates. Number three, oh, we need to reboot the machine. Can't handle that. So we've got some double reboot support in there and things a little bit better. But rather, as like I said, moving forward to Windows 10, that whole story is a lot better. Mm. And I'll touch on that a bit later on. So
there's nothing like making that servicing stack groan under those 186 updates. And I don't know if anyone... Has anyone had to actually install a baseline Windows Server 2008 R2 machine recently? Shame on you if you have.
Yeah.
Because that's great when you do that first update check and
it goes, I'm
going to reboot, sits there at about 68% and goes, I'm not doing anything else. I'm just going to sit here at 68% for the rest of your natural life. and you can just forget about it. Not going anywhere else.
Let's continue.
Okay. What are you saying, man? What are you saying? One other thing I'd like to point out here in the hierarchy section, so the total hierarchy scale goes up to 600,000 clients or machines or clients through MDM. Now, how do we feel about that? 600,000, are we right? Yep, good. Righto. Okay, if you've got more than 600,000 machines, my advice to you is to go somewhere else where it's going to be easier. however, we are going to be able to handle... those large-scale numbers. We've always been big when it comes to scale. We're just pushing that even further.
The MP logic there has improved a bit too, and that we saw that with a few of our customers, right? What MP do I go to? And if it's not really obvious, you get the wrong one. So being able to put MPs now in the boundary groups so you can actually assign them helps us out a lot there.
Absolutely. You've got to love that. Here's a great big list of MPs. Which one do I want today? I want the one that is... least useful for you. I want to go where you don't want me to go. All right, sorry. Fair enough. In terms of the hybrid functionality here, some of the things that I like is that sort of ongoing support for the device platforms, making it easier for us to get to other devices. Rusty?
Excuse me. So we're starting to see where this is going, right? So this connection into Intune, Intune's actually delivering some additional features to us into the console. So it's not just, you know, the plain old Windows devices. We're starting to get to those other operating systems. And hopefully you've noticed that story with Microsoft now that, you know, all our frenemies are now our actual friends these days.
Absolutely. If we could just cut the recording right
now, all about giving
that'd
you guys
be really good. Thanks very much.
All about giving you more choice.
Cool.
Which is good. Let's get on to the cool stuff, right?
All right. Well, just before we get there, just a couple of examples of some things that we've done. Now, the first one is in the import driver wizard. So who's ever decided that they're going to import an entire package of drivers straight in?
Yep, sounds good. I've got a new hardware model. Download that cab file from Dell. Yeah, just import all the drivers.
Because that's only got just what I need, right? I don't have anything else? All right, cool. And why don't we stick it in the boot image? Because really, right, what I need more than anything else is the NVIDIA driver in Windows PE, because I'm going to play WoW, goddammit, in a pre-installation environment. I am going off in
that environment.
I don't need no boss key. I just turn the machine off and on again, and I'm not in Windows PE
Bluetooth
anymore.
Bluetooth tether to your phone.
Bluetooth tether to your phone. What could possibly go wrong? So we're being nice to you now. And what we've done is we've tried to do a lot around the Are You a Moron pages of Config Manager. So
also known as resume generating events.
Resume generating event. Thanks to Jess Dodson for that one, I do believe, if she's in the audience now. So basically it's saying, do you really want to do this? You know, we'll stick it in there if you want, no problem. Oh, and then of course what we're also doing is we're making sure that we're not putting in any drivers in there that aren't going to match the architecture of the boot image. Cool. And then the last one, of course, you stuck the NVIDIA driver in, really? Did you have to do that? Maybe not. I love this one.
Oh, this is great. Risky deployment warning. Are you sure you want to push out that tar sequence for Windows 7 to your server farm?
I reckon when you do that, that is like achievement unlocked. Screwed your business. Gone.
Mind you, I was actually at working at a customer and this happened. Had one guy doing tar sequence testing and something wasn't working, so I'll just make it a mandatory deployment.
Brilliant.
No
worries. That'll do the job.
It's an empty collection, that's fine. Some guy over there going, I need to add some servers to this collection. Oh, whoops, I chose the wrong collection. And away Windows 7 went out. Now, the silver lining was that it managed to start the task sequence on the Hyper-V hosts before the VM. So while they were down for a few hours, we could plug and play those VMs back in. But again, anti-moron awareness.
What I do love, though, is this. The fact of the matter is that we will let you do this. Now, what I suspect happened is originally when the product team were thinking of this, this probably said, I am leaving my employment under bad circumstances. Bang, let's do this, and just walk out the door.
Distribution point summary report. This was came out when originally with R2, but it's had some improvements. I've seen some very interesting data in this. We had a customer recently where they've got, I think they had 15 distribution points across the environment. You run this and, 12 of those 15 DPs haven't been used in the last 30 days because they had their overlappings wrong, they had their boundaries wrong, and also they had all these extra machines that they didn't actually need. So,
nice.
Actually check that out. This is great. Who's actually using this feature that automatically upgrade my clients? Yeah, a couple of people. It's nice in that things happen automatically, but there wasn't a whole lot of control. So, baby steps again. We'll stop this happening on servers, which is generally a good thing. More improvements to come with the next version.
There. All right.
Application management, Macca.
Thank you. Yep. All right, so this was a feature that we really brought out to try and give you some, you know, some nice policy wrapper around what's going on through the Intune environment. So just some standard stuff in here allowing us to lock down things like the ability to actually copy stuff up to iCloud on an iOS device, for instance, because we don't necessarily want all of that data going up to that user's personal environment. Now, you've got to remember that this is a fair way back in time, so Matt's going to be talking to us about probably some pretty major improvements that we've had in that area a little bit later on. But this sort of represents that first step into that more managed world when it comes to Intune. So I think you'd agree that we've done quite a bit to try and make things better. However, there's been quite a lot of concern and interest out there about what are we going to do with Windows 10 moving forward and how are we actually going to integrate with the new way in which we're delivering that operating system now. Because as you know, we're no longer doing that big bang anymore. There's going to be no more Windows after this one, except if something changes and it happens again, but we don't think it will. So we really want to talk now about the new version of System Center Configuration Manager. Welcome back, a name that's easy to say. Because how many of us are getting sick of calling everything System Center 2012 R2-Configuration Manager? Right, or Config Manager.
SP1 CU3, yes.
Yeah, it's just got a little bit harsh. So what are we really bringing out here? Essentially what we want to do is, first and foremost, we want the upgrade experience from an earlier version of Configuration Manager to the new System Center Configuration Manager to be seamless. Now, first of all, who has been using Config Manager since, let's say, 2007? Hands up. Right.
Good.
2003. Keep your hand up. 2003. SMS2. Yeah, I can see the color draining from your face already. 1.2. 1.0. All right. So we've got some old hands in the audience. And as you know, Microsoft says to you often, just do the in-place upgrade. It'll be fine. What could possibly go wrong? As you're sitting there typing out your resume, you hit the setup button. And as you know, in the past, it hasn't necessarily gone as well as it could have. And you could apply that to the operating system as well. You know, we've all had our experiences with doing upgrades, and that's why we generally tend to build out new. And then when we left 2007 to go to 2012, we didn't let you do the upgrade, we did the migration instead. And now we're at a point where, going to the new version, we need to make this as seamless as it is with the operating system. And there are reasons for this, which Rusty will go into soon. So we're saying to you now that in this new version, you'll do the in-place upgrade, similar to the way you do this with Windows 10, and you'll get there and you'll be good to go.
And from that point onwards, it's going to get even easier. Mm. Right? So it's going to be kind of like a service pack type of upgrade to get onto System Center Configuration Manager.
Mm-hmm.
But from that point on, things get even easier.
And a really good thing about this new servicing model that we're going to use for Configuration Manager as well as Windows 10 is probably this bottom point here. There's a lot of activity that happens on User Voice for this product. If anyone's been to uservoice.microsoft.com and looked up Configuration Manager, there is a lot of activity there, and a lot of it gets listened to by the product team. By going into this new methodology of servicing, we're able to get this stuff in there quicker, and then fundamentally, all those new features coming in Windows 10 can be managed all the quicker as well.
Guess what's at the top of that list for new features of Config Manager? Anybody wanted to call a task sequence from a task sequence? It's up there.
Good.
So hopefully that means it's coming soon. So we're currently sitting at this technical preview for SECM. I'm going to keep calling it SECM. That's okay. So obviously, you know, a lot of the functionality isn't there just yet. So if you want to fire this up, I definitely recommend you do that. You're going to need to spin up a lab to do that. You can't upgrade to the technical preview. Mm. So set it up in isolation, play with it. And when the real thing comes out, that's what you can apply to your existing environment.
And one of the things I'd mentioned too about the technical previews is that they are only relevant for 60 days, and then they'll expire. So you need to make sure that you have applied the appropriate technical preview that is out in 60 days or the update that is available within that 60 days to keep it rolling along. Mm. Having said that, we're getting very close to release, I do believe. I hope I'm allowed to say that. Matt's not glaring at me, kind of, sort of, at the moment, so I don't think I've said anything bad. So we're getting very close to release, but already we've shipped a whole bunch of functionality in the technical preview through Preview 1, Preview 2, and Preview 3. There's just a couple of things we might throw out there before we jump on and move into the stuff that we can do with OS deployment, is the always-on availability groups. So we now have support for high availability of the SQL database. What about high availability of the site server? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? We'll get there eventually, don't worry. Peer cache support for Windows PE. How good is this? So the idea is that when I'm doing an OS deployment, a machine on my network will, first of all, broadcast out to everyone saying, right, has anyone got the bits that I need, please?
The big stuff, the WIM files.
And then there's crickets. And you go, all right, no worries, I'll just go to the DP and get it. And then I'll do what I've got to do, and then I'll register the fact that I've got this stuff. And then the next person who wants to do their OS deployment says, who's got the bits? And my machine, if I've turned it on to be a source, says, yeah, I've got the bits, no worries, you want them? And we haven't had to go and get them from the DP again. I really like that feature.
Of course, you've got to think about the cache, right? If you're deploying a big fat WIM file, that's, you know, 5 gigs plus boot image and other stuff, you might need to make some adjustments there for your cache size.
Cluster aware settings.
Yes.
If you were an American audience, you would be applauding by now. You'd be standing up. You'd be. What do I have to spell it out? You would be applauding by now. Cluster aware setting. This is fantastic. So for a given collection, I can say everyone in here is a member of the same cluster, and I want to make sure that X percent of these resources are available when I'm servicing this particular collection.
So when you patch to
clearly
that collection.
Clearly, no one cares. Does anyone run clusters anymore? Well, you go, oh, bugger, it doesn't matter if all the nodes go down, we'll be right. Creeping up again. No worries. What do you mean you want services? Sorry, mate.
Moving right along.
All righty. So when it comes to the operating system deployment scenarios, you're going to see a lot of stuff here that's fairly familiar to you. So we've always been able to do that, you know, new computer, fresh off the onto the computer, new image. We've got our Pixie boot capability, which we've always had, wipe and load. So you know, grab the user's data, either image around it or stick it onto a state migration point, put it all back down once we've done the new WIM load. Side by side, so what we're doing is basically grabbing our information off PC1, PC2 is on the desk, and then dropping the new image on PC2 and restoring the user's data on that one. Our removable media is still there, so when you've got that executive that's pretty much useless to everybody in the entire planet that goes off to somewhere with no bandwidth whatsoever and destroys their machine, they can effectively rebuild it off a stick if they need to as well. But there is one brand new scenario.
Yes, the in-place upgrade.
Yes.
And you'll notice this extremely complex task sequence which now handles that natively for you. And this is the new Windows 10 deployment mechanism that we have, right? And again, it's stuff that's been around forever, but nobody dared use it more than once because it was crap. But in Windows 10, the in-place upgrade is really robust. And for any of you that have previously deployed an SOE environment, so most of the apps are good, most of the data's good, well, rather than having this complex task sequence to redo everything, let's keep everything the same and we'll just swap out the Windows 7 bits for the Windows 10 bits, right? So again, the two primary tasks here that are now built in, this is basically a new task sequence template that's in the wizard. right, get the bits down there. You can also provide additional drivers, right? And then this next step here, actually upgrading the operating system. It's going to run setup.exe with what some switches there, which are hard-coded. And if you want, you can add some additional switches using that task sequence variable, right? Quite similar to the way the USMT tasks work. So very simply, you can whack together this task sequence and start upgrading to Windows 10 with very little effort. Mm-hmm. Right? Just looking at what we're going to do as part of this process. Okay, we're going to run through some prerequisite checks. Okay, we're going to download that upgrade package, right? Drivers, the actual vanilla OS. And that's when setup.exe kicks in. And that's going to handle all of the... we're going to inventory the device first, find all the users' applications and data, make sure everything's good to go. We're going to move that old operating system off to the side, gets renamed Windows.old. We install the new OS and restore the users' data and settings. So all of that functionality is built into the Windows setup.exe. So you don't have to worry about it. A couple of caveats there. You've got to use vanilla media, right? So you can't go hand crank your own custom image and then try and do an in-place. But the idea is that you've previously deployed an image, so the machine's already in a good state. You've already done all the hard work. So getting you onto Windows 10 is super simple. Machine comes back up, the users log in, and everything is where it was before.
And you got to love that because, you know, in a traditional setting, what we'd do is we'd be getting that WIM down, then we'd be going into the main OS, and then we'd be doing everything else that we had to do previously. So the Config Manager client would be going back and seeing what applications it had to load down, what updates it needed to put in, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas in this case, Config Manager client doesn't really need to do anything. Basically, the in-place upgrade scenario has handled everything because everything's already there. We're just basically restoring all those symbolic links. We're reconstructing that registry. It's back down where it was. And all the Config Manager client really needs to do is just re-register itself with the management point, and then we'll clean up that client record in the database for you. So very little that could possibly go wrong.
You can count on that. So one of the brand new scenarios that we are lighting up in this new version is working alongside Microsoft Intune to provide MDM style of management to devices, but everything is staying on-prem, all right? So the idea is that, again, Config Manager is connecting to Intune, so it understands all of those new policies and things, but then it's the SECM site server that's delivering those MDM style instructions to your devices. So this is great if you've got maybe Windows embedded or, you know, handheld barcode scanners and things like that that you want to manage with, you know, MDM style of management, but you don't want everything going up to the internet.
Good for IoT type boards as well that maybe in a really specialized or secure environment that aren't actually allowed to connect directly to the internet as well.
One thing just to note on this though is that when those machines are provisioned, right? So that they're now managed by your SCCM site server. They're only ever managed by your SCCM site server. So if you take those devices somewhere else and connect them to the internet or something, they're not going to be managed. They're not going to be connected, right? So the whole point is this is a kind of a specialized scenario, right? Highly regulated, or it's all in a warehouse, it's not connected to the internet, whatever. That's where it becomes useful.
It's Windows 10 only, so no iOS, on-prem, NBN. No
absolutely.
Android,
yep.
On-prem, NBN. Windows 10, IoT embedded devices, things like POS systems and things we're looking for.
Yep,
not
totally.
Not end user devices, because as soon as that device roams, they're not going to receive policies, apps, nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So just for the mic, MDM on Windows 10 only, other devices.
And if you're looking at the docs at the moment under TP3, we're basically restricting it to phone IoT, and Windows 10 Enterprise is capable of doing this as well at the moment, I believe. Yep.
Ooh, some dots.
There you go.
Just in case you weren't sure what was happening there. So having a look, bit of a closer view, we'll just run through this very quickly. So like you would enroll a device traditionally with Intune or an MDM service, okay, checks in with Config Manager, the device then gets enrolled, your management point sends out its management instructions there, and also you get access to your DP. So if you are pushing out things with data behind it, then it's getting everything from that local DP.
The next slide is my favorite.
Maka?
Crickets. Crickets. What do we need to do? Azure Virtual Machines architecture. Thank you. There was just one, but that's good enough for me. So I can put the entire architecture now into Azure if I want. I don't have to put anything on-prem whatsoever if I don't want to. For me, personally, this is beautiful because when I do a lot of demos, I don't particularly want to be carrying around a really heavy machine anymore. So being able to put everything into Azure is really, really useful for me. Notice, too, the site server up there as well if you need to.
There's your high availability.
There you go. It's not going to go down in a hurry. We talked about this already.
It's some pretty pictures quickly.
That's actually big because it cut down the number of DPs by.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Yeah. Very yep. True. So just for the benefit of the recording there, I was just mentioned that is a real benefit because it really cuts down the amount of DPs you need to be looking after on premises dramatically. Yep. Oh, all right. You can have this one all in your own, mate.
Let's talk about servicing. Now we had a recent blog post go out on the SCCM blog, which is great, because originally we said that Windows 10, if you want to manage Windows 10, you need this new version of SCCM, which is fine, but it's not coming for a few months. So we changed our decision, and we said that with the current version of SCCM, so we're talking 2012 R2 SP1 or R1 SP2, you need some cumulative updates on there. We will support the first release of the Windows 10 long-term servicing branch, because that's not going to change for 10 years, so that's okay. And we'll support the first couple of releases of Windows 10. Now, if you've been following that, we've already had two, right? The big release in July. We've just had a release last week. So what's said there on the blog is that we're going to support Windows 10 through February, because round about that time next year, right, maybe later, maybe sooner, it's still up in the air, there's going to be another release of Windows 10. If you want to manage that release of Windows 10 with Configuration Manager, you need to upgrade, all right? If you don't, if you want to sit on it for a little bit, that's okay. The current version of Windows 10 will be supported through to roughly November-ish next year if we keep to that, our planned release dates. So you have got some time, so don't freak out that you have to upgrade straight away. But if something new and exciting comes out in the early next year that you want to manage, then you're going to need to upgrade. Okay? And it's because of this whole Windows servicing model is just not doesn't work nicely in the current version. If you're on 2007 still, good luck to you. All right?
If you're on 2007 still, you are as worthy of ridicule as running LTSB.
Boom. You can manage LTSB there. Again, the first release of Windows 10, it's supported as a management. You can install the client on there, but no OSD. Right? It was too hard to make that old version of WinPE work with Windows 10. So Windows 10 management, right? That's the first bit there that we've just talked about. Now, what's happening with SECM? Like I said, we've dropped all the difficult to say version numbers. It's now just System Center Configuration Manager. In the same way that Windows 10 is Windows 10 across all the platforms, right, regardless of these updates we're pushing out, SECM is taking that same methodology. So what's going to happen is quite regularly, we're going to be releasing new bits for SECM. And there's a brand new built-in services node that we have to receive those updates and display them in the console. So when you want to upgrade and get new features, you go right-click, install, done. All right? And SECM will handle these new features that get installed. So again, rather than this massive service pack coming down, that's a bit of a project and change control and lots of process, it's smaller changes, but much more rapid. All right? And each of those versions, we will support for 12 months. All right? So again, if you're in an environment where you need some stability and you can't install the features as soon as they come out, you can sit on it for a while, but not that long, okay? Again, when you install those updates is up to you. You're not going to be forced to do it until you get to the end of that 12 months. All right, so the way that we're going to name these things, you'll notice here we've got the YYMM format. So the current one that's in TP3 is 1510, right? It was released last month.
Can we run different versions across different sites?
No, this is going to be a site upgrade. And not all the time, but sometimes those updates will include client updates. So you really don't want to get in that mixed mode situation. There's another question.
What about all the other components like MDT and SQL?
What about things like MDT and SQL?
We can't really talk to those as a way of servicing what we're doing in Configuration Manager. So we don't know whether those servicing methods will change for those either. But if there is going to be a change to our requirements in the back end for any of that, you'll be given plenty of notice. Yep.
What's more likely to happen is that at some point we'll go, right, if you're still running SQL 2008 R2, then before you apply this next update, go and update your SQL Server. Mm. Right? So this is not going to upgrade other systems. It's just going to upgrade SECM. That's something that's likely to happen, right?
And as Russell says, remember too, you're going to be supported for a certain amount of time anyway. So if you know ahead of time that update X is going to require this change to SQL, then you've got two iterations to get away with, which is going to be a certain period of time. So it gives you some time to actually build that change control in for those other components.
All right. So this is great, right? Just like Windows 10 is going to become, you know, almost an evergreen OS, right? Our primary management tool is on a similar path.
It's great. Okay? Repeat after me. It's great. These aren't the droids you're looking for.
So, this is what our servicing node looks like, right? So it's a static page. And what this is telling us is that for our environment, right, it's a few months in advance, you've already pushed out Windows 10. We've had a couple of releases there. We can see some code names there. So what we'll see in the production release will be, again, that month, year moniker. Mm-hmm. What does my fit look like? And there's going to come a time when the third release of Windows comes out, and this is going to start building up, right? You've got some machines that are going to be expiring soon. You need to keep them up to date. Because when you've got SECM handling the updates, you've got all the control. But you need to keep your tabs on this dashboard to say, right, if these things are going to expire soon, I better pull my finger out and get these updates pushed out.
And the great thing about that is you'll just be able to drill down into that, see exactly what those machines are, and target those in a more robust fashion as quickly as possible. So we're not leaving you out in the cold in that respect at all.
So the other thing that's quite handy, I'll just jump across to live demo, with a little bit less data in there. But if we just scroll down here a little bit, right, this is telling us about the Windows 10 releases, right? So this is routinely checking with Microsoft and saying, right, we've got these couple of versions out in the world now, that original release, and we had the release just last week, right? Sometime in the future, there's going to be a third release, right? When that third release becomes current branch for business, that July release is going to drop support. So what that means is if anyone's got that July release running on their systems, you've got about 230 days before that device is out of support.
So the laptops that we
Yes. Yeah. So you'll have different scenarios, right, with those different use cases. And you might say these devices are going to go straight to the internet versus being managed by SECM for the updates. That takes care of that. And you can also, there'll be new group policies in place to say you guys are going to automatically get it as soon as the update's available, or you're going to wait 2 months, right, at whatever time you define before it installs automatically. So you guys in IT can just check that it's not something that's going to hurt you, right? The other great thing I'll jump onto here, if I'm just going to drag it across here because I can't see. you know, we mentioned about client updates. So we've got another couple of dashboards in here. So again, because of these updates, they're going to be delivered to us quite regularly through the SECM console. Every now and again, we're going to have to update our clients, our SECM agents. And not only do we have that tick box still to say, hey, automatically go and upgrade my clients, we can create what we call a pre-production client collection. So you put some test machines in your collection, you say, that's my pre-production collection. So when updates come out, it'll deploy the new SECM agent to that collection first. You can do your testing and your validation to make sure it's all good, and then you push that into production, and that'll roll it out to the rest of your fleet. Again, more stuff that SECM is handling rather than you having to handle it. All right. Right, there's a snapshot with something with a bit more data, right? So, let's invite up Matty, and he's going to tell us a bit more about new stuff coming in Intune. Any other questions about that? I know there's been a lot of confusion about the support stuff with SECM.
Just specifically with the updates, you mentioned there that you would configure the device to go and look for updates in group policy. Does that mean that you'd build out your update package and make it available, and then group policy would determine when the device checks for the update? Or is that all still in SECM?
The first decision is, are we going to deliver updates through SECM/WSOS,
yeah,
or is it going to go to the internet directly, right? That's Windows Update. So if it's through SECM, then yeah, you'll still have to find the package, approve it, and push it out to that device.
Yeah.
If it's going straight to Windows Update, then the group policy is just wait this amount of time before you automatically do it. And you'd have different groups of machines with different delays, so you can create a staged deployment.
I suppose the point is you've got options.
Yeah.
So if you're not using Config Manager, you can use Group Policy like you would with just normal WSOS updates. If you've got Config Manager, you're probably going to use that enterprise client features, right?
Yeah, so anything going to change on the management license?
I believe this new version, and don't quote me on this, you need to speak to your licensing specialist.
You're being recorded, Russ.
That is...
Talk to your licensing specialist.
let's stop there before we have another resume generating event.
Yeah.
You want to take that?
Hey guys, we've got like 20 minutes left to go, and I wanted to answer some questions after this as well, so we'll kind of race through a bit of it. For those who don't know me, I am the original session owner from last Tuesday. We had to cancel, so first of all, really sorry about doing that to you all. But I think hopefully with all the comedic input from Macca and Rusty, I think hopefully we've covered enough of it. So my name is Matt Shadbolt. I'm a program manager on the ECM team. I'm based in Melbourne. ECM team is configuration manager, so the System Center suite and also Intune. Specifically, I work in the CXP team, which is the customer experience team for the Intune product. So my job is to work with you guys in bigger customers and the accounts teams and so forth in getting Intune deployed into your production environments and getting your devices onto our service. I work for Brad Anderson's organization, so we work directly with the developers and the engineers out of Redmond. And my manager, I thought he would be here, but he's from Seattle. He delivered a session this morning as well. So I work with the guys in the States on a daily basis. And essentially my job is to try and remove those blockers for deployment for you guys. So if something's broken, it's on me for me to try and, I suppose, escalate that through the product group and the PMs out of Redmond. So today I've got some demos. I know that we originally said this was a level 200 session. I was going to put a whole bunch of marketing slides and stuff together, but I've got some demos to talk about and not too many slides, so we'll just go for it. And hopefully about 6 o'clock we'll do some questions as well. So we're releasing right as we speak. Actually, I don't think it's hit the Asian data centers yet, but Mac OS support for the Intune MDM standalone clients at the moment. So this is from, got it on the slide here, 10.9 upwards, Apple released an MDM management stack within their operating system. We're basically allowing you to deploy security policies and so forth to Mac devices and manage them without having to put a Config Manager client like we did in Config Manager 2012 R2. So anybody doing Mac management with Config Manager at the moment? One. Anybody got Macs that they're just not managing? Yeah, cool. Okay.
Because it was so hard.
It was really hard. So we've had Mac management since Config Manager 2012 SP1, I think. The problem with that is because there's no AD and there's no domain aware application, we had to deliver certificates to it. We had to somehow install the PKG file. We had to do a whole bunch of mess to try and get that Config Manager client on it. And then we didn't have a lot of support for the features anyway, so it was just like application deployment and a little bit of hardware, software inventory. So we're kind of moving away from that now. We're going to start using the Mac OS MDM stack to start managing this stuff. So we have it in production now. I'll show you a demo in a second. I was speaking with the feature PM for the Mac OS MDM management last week, and he wanted to, I suppose, really stress that it's a V1 feature release as well. It's not feature complete at the moment. It's really quite basic. You get some password requirements and complexity, some screensaver stuff, and some reporting on your compliant and non-compliant apps. So it's really basic at the moment. We don't have application deployment support. We don't have VPP support yet, but it's certainly in the backlog. And if you're using Macs or you want to start managing Macs, please use that user voice that the guys were talking about before. We do check it, and take all that sort of feedback really seriously. So quick demo. So I've got a demo for both standalone and it's really hard with
just duplicate screen.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. So what I want to do is show you both the standalone console. So for the people new to Intune, we have two ways of running Intune. Standalone, which is the cloud solution, everything up in the cloud, nothing on-prem. And then we've got the hybrid solution as well, which is what Mac was talking about with the Config Manager 2012 integration. I want to show you both of those experiences and just some of the policies in there as well. I've got a tenant here. For a minute.
You notice the great support for Edge browser.
So this is our classic Silverlight console, which doesn't work with Chrome anymore. They got rid of Silverlight, so that's just terrific. We're on Internet Explorer and Firefox at the moment. I've got the demo here as well for the Mac policy side. So if we go into ASIC and compliance here. For all of our MDM-based policy deployments, we actually use what we call configuration items. Configuration items being around for Config Manager, basically DCM from 2007, and we utilize, I suppose, that engine to be able to deliver these policies out to our MDM devices. You'll see here that this is the TP3 preview with the 1510 extensions installed on it, and this console here has been streamlined an awful lot since the R2 releases as well. But you can see here that we've got two types of DCM settings that we're going to be able to deploy out. It's a little bit blurry. But one's for settings for devices managed with a Config Manager client. So that's your traditional DCM compliance settings management that Georgie and I are so familiar with. The second one is the settings for devices managed without the Config Manager client. So these are your MDM policy settings here. You can see that there's iOS and Mac OS X options. Give it a name. I just want to quickly show you what settings are available because it's not a lot. So if I untick the iPhone and iPad because they're obviously going to have different settings, these are the settings that we get available to be able to change. So some password settings, iOS, So we can set things like requiring passwords on Mac devices. We can set complexity requirements, quality requirements, and so forth. So for those not managing their Macs, you probably do want to have a look at this because it should be pretty seamless for your users to go out and deploy this stuff. And the policy console for the Intune standalone is pretty similar as well. So there we go. We've got some SCIP certificate profile stuff, some Wi-Fi profile stuff. But for the security side, it's just pretty straightforward password settings and things. Is that cool? Yep. In terms of the enrollment side, I've got a little screen cap of here because I don't have a Mac. So enrollment, we obviously don't have a client. So what we do is we go to portal.manage.microsoft.com on the client. They see this little pop-up here where the device is either not enrolled or the company portal's not kind of identified. They click on that. They run through some, it's very similar to an iOS registration within Intune. So you get that management profile pop-up, you accept and trust and accept all those scary prompts, and then next, and you're under management with Configuration Manager. So it's pretty easy. That's Mac management. Second one is coexistence with Office 365 MDM. So this one's been quite a popular one for a while. Is anybody using the Office 365 MDM product to manage their devices? One at the back. I thought it was more popular than that. Anyway, so when it came to Office 365, we only ever allowed one MDM authority, and once you set that, you couldn't change it. Without calling us anyway. So now we allow both. So you might have a subset of users that you want to license with Intune, allow their devices to be managed via Intune MDM licenses, and then a bigger, broader amount of users that you get your MDM features with the O365 licensing. We can manage those with the O365 MDM stack. O365 MDM stuff doesn't give you things like application deployment and things though. So we want you to use Intune, but if you don't want to spend the money, then we're going to allow you to use both of those MDM stacks. And there's no demo for that, so that's a little bit boring. Customized terms of use. So we have the ability in Intune, we've had it for a while, to deliver customized terms of use to your end users, right? So we might have a set of users in Asia, we might have another set of users in America, and we want different sets of terms of use to be delivered to these users. So when they go and enroll their devices, they have to accept or deny those terms of use. I've got a little screen cap of that here as well. It's actually quite a nice UI because I've got two different customized TOUs deployed to this particular user. You can see that the TOU2 and TOU1, and we can go through and read all those terms of use and either accept or deny all of them. So if we deny these, we actually just block access to the self-service portal, so they can't receive apps and those sort of things. It's got some great inbuilt update functionalities as well. So if you update things, it allows you to reissue that to all your users. So next time they launch the self-service portal, they'll get the pop-up and say, do you accept or deny? It's a pretty cool feature. It's been something that's been asked for a really long time. So that's a good delivery. This particular feature here is in standalone only at the moment, but it's planned for future Configuration Manager updates. Extended platform support, so iOS 9 and Android Marshmallow zero-day support. I've got some details around that stuff. When iOS 9 dropped, we natively supported it within Intune standalone, also hybrid. The same for Android 6.0. There's a whole bunch of new features that are available on those platforms that we don't yet support, though. So we support all the old features that we support in iOS 8 and Android 5 and 4.6, but they're slowly coming along. So watch the Intune blogs for updates because they're really good at releasing these new updates. So some of the two of the features that we did bring across was the managed app conversion and app, AirDrop and iCloud restriction policies. So these both are around our mobile application management features. So the MAM stuff, I'll show you some MAM demos later, but MAM is deploying a policy to your Office app specifically and stopping things like cut and paste. I think Brad did a demo of it at the keynote. So that's Intune managing those. And previously, before iOS 9, what we would have is users would have Office installed, for example. They'd have Word or they'd have Excel. And then we want to deploy those man policies to them. And the only way we can apply that is for the user to uninstall the app and then reinstall the app. Right? Really, really crappy user experience. So with iOS 9, we have the ability to apply that the manage app policy post that user installing it. Much, much better. And of course, AirDrop and iCloud as well. So Apple brought AirDrop in with iOS 9 and broke all of our man functionality because all of a sudden the save as button, you're allowed to AirDrop documents around your local network. So we blocked that stuff as well. And for Android, there was no new features that we've added for Marshmallow support, but there'll be lots of stuff coming soon. Windows 10, as the guys have said about the Windows 10 stuff, there's so much focus on Windows 10 at the moment, it's crazy. The only really way to keep up with it is to RSS feed it or something, because every single week it seems like there's something new coming with Windows 10. We brought Windows 10 feature policies in, such as disabling Cortana and things. Both of these policies are for both the mobile and the desktop, so Windows 10 desktop computers as well as your Windows 10 mobile when that gets released. MSI delivery via the MDM channel has been something that we've been talking about to a lot of customers this week. So these are your devices that rather than putting a Config Manager client on it in Windows 10, we're going to do the MDM management of them. We'll enroll them via Azure AD Join at the bottom there. We now have the ability to deliver MSI installs to these devices via the MDM channel, which is pretty cool, I think. I don't think so, no. Just take a while. So these sort of scenarios are your BYOD scenarios, your home user scenarios, or choose your own device. So we might buy a device, we might run the Azure AD auto enrollment, and then start receiving those two or three lob apps while I'm at home. I'm not in the office, I'm not physically plugged in. And all that just runs over the MDM channel. Enterprise data protection is a new feature that's coming in Windows 10. We've lit up these. EDP is going to be a game changer in terms of Windows 10 security. I think it's going to be one of those real features that enterprises go, it's worth jumping on Windows 10 now for. And that's essentially doing mobile application management or application management and data management within the platform itself. So what you'll do is you'll protect applications and say any data that's created by this application can't be copied somewhere else. It can't be sent via email. It can't be copied and pasted. And you can just pick and choose. So it can be any legacy app. It can be any old SAP app, any old Java app, whatever it needs to be. Because it's done at the platform level, it's super secure and super cool. So we've lit up all those policy settings already. RMS is a bit different.
And it also doesn't support every kind of document, right? So RMS is great for office documents, but like PDF at the moment is, right? But this is now at the application layer through the platform.
So the kind of the way we see it is we use mobile application management policies, I'll show you in a minute, for the non-Windows devices. So you've got your iOS and your Android devices. We use MAM to secure the data on within those apps. EDP is going to be the Windows 10 version of that. And because we have full control of the platform, we baked it into Windows itself rather than applying them at the individual app levels. And then we just basically switch that policy on by giving it which application we want to protect. It's pretty cool. There's some demos and stuff around that Satya's been doing the last couple of days as well. It's probably worth having a look there. And Azure AD Join auto-enrollment is something that I think everybody's kind of excited for. And that's where we are just going to use the out-of-box experience. Ben was saying there was a demo of it the other day, so I'm sure there's a video of it. You get your brand new PC from JB Hi-Fi, you run through the out-of-box experience, you get the prompt to say, do you want to enter your corporate credentials or your school credentials? You pop those in there, it goes off to Azure AD, it registers the device, Intune picks that up, and then all the security policies start streaming down to them. So we can set those PIM policies, we can deliver those MSIs, we can find your compliant and non-compliant apps. And there's no need for that user to have been in the office or do a traditional domain join.
Or speak to IT.
Yeah.
That's what we really want, right?
Yep. So Windows 10 is a huge investment area for us, and it's just going to keep getting better and better. It's cool. It's really cool. Self-service passcode reset was dropped last week. I was preparing this last week, and I was really happy to see it to make it into the last build. So we drop builds every month, and sometimes things slip or they get in. This one came forward, which is awesome. So one of the main features of our MDM platform is doing passcode resets from admins, right? So we've got 10,000 iPads out there. How many of those do people forget their pins for, right? It happens all the time. Previously, those users would have to call up helpdesk. Helpdesk would right click, reset passcode, and then the user's device would unlock and their passcode would be cleared. We've now given the users the ability to self-service that passcode reset. I think we've got some time. I might quickly just show you that that process. Duplicate. So this is the portal.manage Microsoft page, which should be. And here is what your end users would see when they log on to the self-service portal. You can see all my devices that are under management. You can see that prompt there that the Mac users would get as well if you were trying to do that enrollment. You can see here I've got an Android, I've got an iPad, I've got a Windows phone, I've got a Windows 10 pad. So up until last week, we didn't have this ability, but now a user... Let's say the user has forgotten their PIN on their iPad and they've got their normal Windows 10 laptop. What we can allow them to do is log into this particular page here and reset that PIN without having to call help desk. So if you open this up here, we've got reset passcode. The user can click that button. It unlocks their iPad or their Android device, and then they're able to reset that PIN code when the policy applies again. So it's going to save us a heap of work for the help desk guys. Last one is Intune Man without MDM. So I'm going to demo this one as well. So Brad gave a demo of our Intune Man features, the mobile application management, on Tuesday during his keynote. These are our data loss prevention policies that we can deliver to our Wrapped and Office apps for iPads or for iOS and Android. It's a real key feature for us when we're trying to compete against other MDM solutions and other vendors who have similar sort of things. So when we released Office for the iPad, we didn't want to create multiple versions of Word for different MDM vendors. We didn't want multiple versions of Word for work, for school, for home. What we did is we enabled those Word and Excel apps to have multi-identity built into them, right? And what we do with MAM is we actually look at that business identity and we wrap all that data that you're creating and you're using within those business contexts with our MAM policies to stop that data from leaking. So that's what Brad was showing you the other day in terms of I don't want to allow this particular confidential document copied into a Twitter app or saved into an unsafe location. Before Wednesday, when Satya announced, it was Wednesday morning our time, we had to have MDM device enrollment for this stuff to work. So we had to take over that user's device. We had to become the manager of it. We then had the ability to do remote wipes, and users were a little bit scared for their personal devices of what we could see and so forth. We released on Wednesday that would now allowing the ability to do that MAM DLP protection without actually having to enroll the device. So what we have is a basically MDM-less man. It's not a very easy thing to say. Just ask me. This also means One other point, this also means that we don't have to get rid of your current MDM vendor. So if you're using Mobile Iron or AirWatch, we can sit side by side with that because these apps are enlightened and they can receive that man policy without actually having to be enrolled in Intune, right? You still need an Intune license. So if you've got EMS, then you can be covered for it. But it's a really, really easy process to basically create a policy and deploy to your users without actually having any impact on the devices. There's no enrollment, there's no user interaction until that policy comes down and they're prompted to set a PIN or something like that. So what I thought I'd do is show you just the quick console. So I'm fairly certain this demo hasn't been done anywhere in the world, which I think is pretty cool because it was only released on Wednesday. So fingers crossed it works. Portal. Azure.com. So my account here has been enlightened, or basically flighted with this particular feature. This is coming really, really soon. It's been announced, it's supported. But it's still in our tap program at the moment for certain customers. So it will be there soon. Okay, new node, Intune. So there's some reporting there as well, but the current build that I'm on is not up to date with it, so it's not working. So this is as simple as it is for the man policy deployment. So this is, again, what Brad was demoing the other day, but with the Intune integration. We're just taking that whole Intune side away from it. So we've got our users coming from Azure Active Directory, as we would expect it to, and then we've got policies for app configurations. So what we might have is all of our execs or something like that showing up in here. And deploy specific restriction policies to particular users. So we might say, for our entire exec group, every time you launch Word, we need a four-digit PIN. And you can't copy any data anywhere else. For our information workers, we might go, well, we're going to allow you to have 30 minutes before we're going to prompt again for a PIN, so that when we're not getting in that user's way. So these are our policies here. When I go and add a policy, I have to give it a name and a platform. And then what I do is I target certain apps. So you can see here at the moment, at this particular build time, we've got OneDrive, Excel, PowerPoint, and Word that have been enlightened for this particular feature. So what we do is go ahead and tick these. So when my users who are using their Azure AD credentials, next time they launch Word using their credentials, they're going to receive this policy down, and then they're going to have app restrictions applied to those applications. So those four applications at the moment. That's a nice UI, isn't it? Where's the save button?
Off the screen.
Off the screen. Nope. Good UI, isn't it? I'll take that back to the team. And these are the settings that we've got. So we've got prevent iCloud backup. So we can say on this particular version of Word, we're not going to allow any data to go to iCloud. We're going to allow data to be transferred to none. So if I've got this particular document in Outlook, for example, we're not going to allow you to move that document or that data to any other application. It's got to stay in. Got to stay in Outlook. Restricting the copy and paste and so forth. That simple PIN I was talking about before is probably the most, the most popular policy for us. We can set here to say, do we want to use a fingerprint instead of that PIN, which is quite a new feature for us as well. So every time we open up Word, it's going to say, please use your PIN or touch the fingerprint reader, and that'll unlock that application as well. So all we do is go there. Error creating policy ID. I've got one pre-canned here though. And all we need to do is deploy it to user groups, right? So I've got this particular policy deployed to help desk staff. All the staff in there, next time they open up Word or Excel or Outlook on their iPads, they're going to have those DLP policies applied to them, and then they're not going to be able to copy data in and out of their applications. All this without having to do the end user enrollment, without having to install management profiles and VPN profiles and all that sort of stuff on our devices. So it's we actually think this is pretty much going to change the game in terms of the MDM side, because we don't have to take full management of your user's devices. So if a user wants to use their email on their home device, we can apply these policies to them without having to actually take full control management of their device. And that comes with the EMS stuff. You don't need to do anything else other than create these policies and deploy them to your users. So it's a pretty cool feature and very popular on Wednesday. So yeah, that's my last demo anyway. So is there any questions on that stuff? Or do we want to just go into some general questions about Config Manager and things? It will be, yeah. So again, this is pre-release here. That again, it wasn't it's not something that's been demoed before, and there'll be more and more apps. So we do have an SDK and we do have a wrapping tool. So if you want to apply these man policies to your own internal line of business apps, you'll be able to do it. And there'll be a bunch of third-party apps as well. So Adobe Reader and SAP and those things are adding that functionality as well. Yeah. Shoot.
Not the Azure SQL as a service.
Yeah.
They haven't given support for that yet. No. But you could have installed normal SQL on a VM.
It's got to be a full SQL install, because we do silly things like
collation requirements. And
don't go dump a SQL VM from the gallery, because it'll be the straight away.
Yeah.
I forgot to show this earlier, that idea of when SECM checks in with the services on the web and says, hey, there's a new version of SECM to light up new features because of Windows 10 or whatever. This is the node there. So that pops up, and then you can right-click, and you know this one's already been installed, but you can deploy that out to your environment. All right,
so you'll have a list of these at some point, and you've just got to be within 12 months of them. So it is really very straightforward. We were we're having a look at the logs and stuff today, and it's really just right-click. It does all your prereq checks. It does all the installation for you, and then it just goes, hey, it's done. Restart the console, because there can be new console nodes and things, and it just works.
Yep.
It doesn't force, no. But we drop support. So, and that's it sounds like a really dire situation to be out of support. But
I likely to have restarts in the services working into some of that restart.
We haven't seen that since, I don't think, so probably not.
We were talking about that today, and to be honest, I don't know. Rusty said, is it just going to go out and blast out your 700 DPs and install? I'm not sure. I'm not too sure how that's going to work.
Again, I think the idea is that it's smaller changes more often, so you'd hope that because we're just swapping out DLLs here and there, in a lot of cases, that we're not going to need things like reboots, and even if it is a big bang, it's not too bad, right? But we'll have to wait and see.
We said that with the CU model in 2012 as well. Like, we'll go to CUs and you won't have to restart as many times, or it won't upgrade all your DPs, and then every CU required it anyway. So it's just easier here, right? It's just we put it in the console rather than having to go to TechNet and download the bits yourself. Yep. But this is going to enable a whole bunch of stuff around the Windows 10. So for example, the EDP stuff. The enterprise data protection stuff I was talking about. This is how we deliver those bits into Config Manager. So when new Windows 10 features comes out, we need to support them within Config Manager. So we need to be able to deliver these updates on a similar sort of cadence to Windows 10. And the same for Intune as well, right? So when iOS 10 comes out, we need to be able to support it in the console here and use some of those features. So it's going to be much easier for us to be able to keep cutting edge and on I suppose, the edge of the new technology with the platforms.
Yeah. And again, no big project to install the upgrade. It's right click, install.
And the MSRT hierarchy, which has got God, it must be like 350,000 devices. They did the upgrade to the RTM bits of Config Manager vNext, or Configuration Manager, System Center Configuration Manager. Like 2 weekends ago, it took a weekend for everything to happen.
You
so.
No.
Nah.
Good.
That's okay. It's Q4 is the release date anyway, right? So it's
yeah. We've promised it Q4.
So how many
year.
Days left in Q4? Like 40. So the in-place upgrade should be really easy as well. Should be trademark. Yep.
Is there any more plans to further tweak the app in VDI behavior with vNext?
I don't know.
Compared to native infrastructure, it's still twice as
Are we going
to
improve app v integration? So yeah, there's patches for the app v client for Windows 10 that made things a little bit better. But I know where you're coming from. We haven't heard anything. Yet.
Check the Config Manager Dogs blog because anything that's changing, Ian Bartlett's normally pretty good on the app V stuff, and he'll blog something pretty quickly.
And check out the user voice page for Config Manager. That's getting a lot of support now. You go on there and you vote for what you want to get enabled, and you'll see them the top 10 in the list. They're all being marked in progress or stuff like that.
We get weekly reports on what's going up and what's going down and what's trending and all those sort of things. So it's taken really seriously, that user voice stuff.
The in-place upgrade, I saw 2012 was on the list.
Yes.
On R2. Will that have to be 2012 SP2?
So the current version of SCCM, you can do the in-place upgrade for Windows 10, but there's just no native task sequence to create.
Sorry.
Oh, right, sorry.
Configuration manager, so if you've got 2012 now, not R2,
I don't know.
I believe, yeah.
Question.
Yeah, so the question for the recording is, do we need to be R2 SP1 or SP2 to get the in-place upgrade to configuration manager vNext?
I believe they will, yeah. The only difference is some, settings to light up some features because R2 was a paid upgrade. But
yeah.
Anything else, guys?
You got about 3 minutes left. No.
Awesome.
All right, the buses should be leaving. All these other questions.
Now.
One more question.
Oh, yeah, just a quick one.
Yep.
At work, we've got 2012 R2 installed, just the bare bones install, and we've been told that the update CU1 and 2 would break out existing bins. I don't know whether that's true or not, but if it is SP1 in the same boat? Will we have to recreate our bins?
Yeah.
Who
told you that?
Yeah. It's one of your sponsors, actually.
Cool.
They came in and installed all for us, and they didn't want to.
So I'm wondering if they're doing something in that WIM in a custom manner. So if they've injected some scripts and stuff.
I would be asking for some evidence as to where they're getting that from, to be honest.
I think there was some changes in the boot image. So after you're supposed to recreate boot images, if maybe that's something in there. Not something I've heard of.
Traditionally, for those big SP updates, we've gone from WinP versions as well. Which has caused some problems in the past for things like Windows 7 deployments with the Windows 8 PE, for example. We had lots of problems with that. But I don't believe this upgrade is a WADK update, is it? It's still Win 10.
It's the CUs.
The CUs.
Yeah, so I think the CU gives you support for using the Windows 10 ADK, but you don't have to.
You don't have to. Yeah.
You can just use the current PE version.
Okay.
But if you wouldn't be using that yet because you're still on original R2, so.
But maybe that's what they're talking about,
possibly. So it might be just a bit confused between versions and stuff. I'd be doing some research before you just go, we can't do CU upgrades because they're saying.
Yeah. And it's really needed if you want to manage Windows 10 devices. So there's, while it wasn't, it was supposed to work, it didn't. You need those CUs applied to do Windows 10 management.
Cool. Shall we go get a beer?
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.